proudly student and listener-supported community radio. CIUT 89.5 FM, celebrating 35 years as the sound of your city.
Called Sidewinder. That is Sidewinder. And this is me, the Taylor Report. And glad to be with you. This is very curious times, as they say. That, by the way, isn't always a good omen, but so we are. Often Phil Conlon is here, but Brother Conlon has to attend the Toronto International Film Festival. It is a Wright, R-I-T-E, with Phil, and he's already alerted me that he's seen a couple of big ones that he's not impressed with. We're going to maybe later in the show talk a little bit about a movie. I don't know if it has anything at all to do with the festival. The movie Elvis, to me, it's a misnomer. It ought to be called The Colonel. It's a film about the Colonel, actually. And if it wasn't, no matter what it is, Tom Hanks steals the show, as it were. And if you're going to put shade on Elvis, I'd say you probably ought to call the film something else. But I'm going to talk a little bit about that, because Elvis was, whether he meant to be or not, found himself in the middle, embroiled in Americans' issue with race and history, legal slavery and legal segregation up to and including his lifetime. And he experienced it, and he also was a cultural expression. As I say, I think he stumbled into this. Well, I'm getting way into that subject, but we'll talk some about it later. The item, of course, on top of everybody's storyline is the royal family, the passing of Elizabeth II, and now we have a new king, Charles III. A couple of things on the matter of Charles. I think the word is ascending to the throne. He makes an oath to Canada as part of his oath. And so I thought, everybody ought to know what he says. Charles III, by the grace of God, of the United Kingdom, Canada, and his other realms and territories, head of the Commonwealth, defender of the faith. And to Scotland, he said, he makes the following oath. I, Charles III, by the grace of God, of the United Kingdom of Great Britain and Northern Ireland, defender of the faith, do faithfully promise and swear that I'll inviolably maintain and preserve the law, I believe, established by the laws in Scotland in prosecution of the claim of the right, and particularly the religion and Presbyterian church government, and by the acts passed in the Parliament the kingdom with the government worship, discipline, rights, and privileges of the Church of Scotland. So help me God. I don't know if people always understand this. There's a tangle involving the church, the royals, and religion, and it gets kind of spelled out. Charles, a few years ago, made a comment and later withdrew it. He was speculating, of course, it was many, many years ago, when his mother was still the queen, and he was talking about this problem of how Britain has evolved and all the colonies and all the various nationalities falling under the realm of the royal families, and asked about you know, this matter of he's the defender of the faith. That's the pledge. And the faith is not... So here's where he made his... They call it a faux pas. He said he was considering that perhaps the pledge should be... the oath should be defender of the faiths, plural, faiths. He withdrew that because somebody explained to him that isn't how it works. As you notice, in the case of Scotland, it is to the Presbyterians, to protect the faith of the Presbyterians. I know these are footnotes, these are small things, but it's to be noted because there isn't a tendency to try to homogenize royalty and one size fits all. But at the end of the day, it turns out it doesn't. And we need to, out of respect for the crown, but also for the people who make it up, understand what the distinctions are. And we can ask why they wouldn't be changeable. Many are wondering if that's possible, that things might be altered. I don't see it happening, personally. We have this... the issue has been raised in Canada, and again, you have to separate the issue, the fact that the passing of the Queen was respected by all. I noticed that if you want to know, it hasn't usually been reported, but the government of Russia sent condolences. I just read a statement from the Chinese government. Extending condolences. But in the realm of politics, there is and differences between states. Inevitably, the monarchy becomes engaged with this. And recently, we went through a summer, a very difficult one, where the subject of apologies was raised. And it was, I would call it rancor, towards the Catholic Church and the Pope about whether or not there was going to be an apology from the Pope. And there was a lot of editorializing and lecturing and hectoring. And it did come to pass that the Pope visited, and the Pope made an apology. When I say that, I wish I had the language in front of me the way I just read the language of Charles's new oath, because 6 months later there will be an argument over whether or not a phrase was missing or the appropriate addendum were mentioned. But at any rate, the Pope made an apology. And there are indigenous people who have pointed out, and are pointing out actually today, that now that Charles has assumed the throne, might be a good time to revisit that. I think it was politically awkward, because the Queen was obviously had become, as the British used to say, superannuated, and it would seem improper to insist that there be an apology from the royal family, all the royals, in whose name the schools, all the work of the Canadian government, including today, if you look at Premier Ford and all the others, there is a Queen's representative, pardon me, King's representative, and reminding everybody that when we dot the I's and cross the T's, we're talking about the things being done in the name of the kingdom, the United Kingdoms. And so that's what was done, I'm sorry to say. But the schools, the institution, all that, that was done by the royal, under the auspices of the British royal family, of King of England, Queen. It actually was Victoria's time. And, you know, we had all these statues knocked down. Some of it seemed you couldn't have avoid talking about it. And some thought that was good, some thought it was bad. Most thought it was okay. And I noticed that John A. MacDonald is at Queen's Park in Ontario, is in a box. They have him in a box, his statue at the bottom of Queen's Park. So people driving by see this sort of Dada artwork, wondering, what is that? And it's Canadians arguing with themselves of what to do with our most famous forefathers. Look at the Americans with George Washington, a very wealthy man, wealthy in that he had, I think, at least 300 slaves, but he's the father of the country. So you say, wow, boy, that's a nice monument. And you say, kind of a problem to think about, actually. So we have John A., but John A. couldn't have been a more loyal. He was very British. And a matter of fact, he said without a monarchy, the American Republic would collapse. He predicted its collapse. And this America, he saw the American Civil War as proof of that. He said, now they're coming apart because they don't have a royal system, and we do. You see, we are order and law and order and respect for the crown, which is above the battle and all that. But at any rate, the war ended, and the British, who were trying to help the South, had to give up pretty much their claim to have any big projects out west because the American army had become so large that there was no longer going to be an argument about what's going to happen to the western half of the continent. There had been an argument previous. All by way of saying these things are rather important, and it would behoove Charles, and not that he can do it on his own. Charles III is locked in an arrangement with Parliament, and he's also a political player, so he can't get up tomorrow morning and think, you know, we really ought to straighten things out in regard to our role, or the fact that we sanctioning of the United Kingdom, of Canada's decision to take children away from their families, and in the words of John A. MacDonald, save the child and kill the Indian in the child. I think that was the concept. Basically a genocidal idea, spoken honestly and frankly by good old John A. We have to thank John A. for being so candid. He would just say things, which at the time made him very popular. So that would be on the agenda, because what they need to do is have a little quiet meeting of the Prime Minister and Charles. And, of course, they would require a request from the Prime Minister of Canada to his parliamentary cousins in the UK and say, we think it would help everything if the royal family would talk about their putting their imprimatur on the schools at the where the thousands of indigenous people were basically robbed of their ancestry and their religion, etc. As you know, practice of their religion was a crime. And all the Christians thought that was best for them, that criminalized the faith of the indigenous people. So I would say, yes, ahead of the church, that is Charles III, probably ought to address that. There's another matter that I think we should address, and the Toronto Star helps out with that in my mind. The Toronto Star of Sunday, September 11, they raised the problem. I bet the editors thought about this a bit. Is Third Charles a charm? Because there was Charles I, Charles II, and now Charles III. And the subtitle is, the new king is expected to do better than his tyrannical, hedonistic predecessors. So they talk about the fact that Charles I is the one who believed he was an absolute ruler, and when he wanted to go to war and or maintain a war with Spain, Parliament was supposed to give him the money. But at a certain point, they say, well, before we give you the money, we want to talk about this, because you're going to make us broke if we continue with the war. And there's also a little question of whether or not you might be a Catholic. And so there was, religion came into it in a big way. But he, at the time, read out to them all the precedents and said that Parliament was subservient to him. Parliament decided it wasn't. And as a result, Charles the First, as they say, lost his head. First, by deciding to fight with Parliament, and then two, because he lost. Figuratively and literally, I would suggest, if you haven't seen it, there's a great film called Cromwell, in which Richard Harris plays Cromwell. You may have heard about him. I don't know. Is it polite to mention his name in these moments? He wasn't opposed to the king. He was opposed to a certain type of rule. And when the king said he was more powerful than, and he had God's blessing and all that, that insulted the Puritans. It led to what was called the interregnum, and 10 years rule under, I think he called himself the Lord High Protector, Cromwell. Richard Harris plays Cromwell. And Alec Guinness played Charles I. And it's a great way to see history. I'm not saying it's perfect history. I hope someone would be inspired by the film to go and look at the story. So that's Charles I. So Charles I, now the Toronto Star has, what I object to is the way they talk about it. They say, because Charles II, the son of the First, he participated in the fighting, trying to restore absolute power to the monarchy, and he was defeated and driven out. He had to go stay with his royal friends until they could sort things out in England. And Charles II was eventually invited to restore the monarchy, and that was roughly 1660. Here's the detail here's the way they talk about him. First, I'll get to Toronto Star talking about him. Of course, he mentions when he reclaimed the crown, they dug up the body of Oliver Cromwell, dug him up, put him on trial, executed him. They chopped off his head. Chopped off the head of his body. They also chopped off the head of his mother, just to make sure that people understood that mothers shouldn't have a child like that. So they hung their remains on a road so that anybody going by would say, see? Anyway, here's how the Star describes Charles II. Charles II, the merry monarch, had a relatively benign reign. He's known primarily for the restoration of the monarchy and a signing of the Treaty of Dover, an alliance with French King Louis XIV, wherein he secretly promised to convert to Catholicism at some future date. My understanding is he did that on his deathbed. And he's known for having fathered at least 14 children. He's like Prince Andrew, I guess, with numerous mistresses. Okay. Well, hey, listen, the author is Steve McKinley. He left out something. Charles I, pardon me, Charles II, successor to Charles I, in 1660, did something else. He formed the Royal African Company. Royal African Company. It was a monopoly, belonged to him and his brother James, who later became, at that time, he was the Duke of York. So Charles II and his brother formed the Royal African Company in 16. So that was almost the first thing he did. I think we can now stop talking about the mistresses. And we could stop talking about him being the merry king and rather benign, because the Royal African Company became the greatest slave shipping company for the next 50 to 100 years. Slaves. And when they were put aboard the slave ships, they were branded. And they had two ways of branding them for identification purposes. They put D, the capital letter D, lowercase O, and Y. That stands for the Duke of York, Charles II's brother and fellow businessman, in slaves. The Duke of York. So they would brand you so that you wouldn't get lost. They had a second brand, and that was RAC, the Royal African Company. Again, and that one, by the way, they knew how to do this. That one was put on the chest. They branded them on the chest with RAC, Royal African Company. They were the way you would with a can of beer or something. It's a brand, and anybody in possession of it would have to be accountable to Charles II and his brother, the Duke of York, later James II. They got filthy rich, they and their company. Thousands and thousands of slaves were taken by the Royal African Company belonging to Charles II. They had a coat of arms. Please, just look it up. All you have to say is Royal African Company. They have a beautiful coat of arms. On it, on the coat of arms, you will see two half-naked African males, and they're pointing to or holding the flags of the royal family, and an elephant. The elephant is holding what looks like a castle on its back. I haven't identified. Pardon me for my slipshod homework, but I don't know what the building is. But it looks kind of like Buckingham Castle, if it's a castle. Buckingham, by the way, was involved in all this, so maybe it is. At any rate, there is a thing called the Royal African Company. I don't know why that slipped the attention of the writer for the Toronto Star, since he said that he was called the Merry Monarch. Well, one of the reasons he was merry is that he established a monopoly. By the way, it wasn't when I say they formed the Royal African Company. The point was that if they caught you, some pirate or what they used to call them, privateer, taking slaves on the Gambia River, they would capture you and do with you as they please, because you are infringing, you are poaching on the royal monopoly for gold, silver, and as the Wikipedia says, gold, silver, and humans. They were in the human business. I think they thought the slaves were human, although I'm not sure of that. As you know, particularly Protestants have had a problem on race issues of deciding who's human. The Catholic Church had a great debate about it, and they decided that the people that they were encountering on their explorations were humans, which made a lot of problems for the army and the thieves, because if they're humans, you have another problem on your hands. If you can define them as subspecies, of course, you can dispose of them, which is common practice or was So anyway, that's my point, is that Charles III wasn't properly introduced to us as one of the three Charles. My guess, based on what I've seen, heard from the gentleman, the king, is that I think he'd be appalled, actually, if you were to ask him. But why not? We are in a period of decolonization, they tell us. But I don't understand why it doesn't proceed. The way to decolonize is to identify things that have been done in the name of the United Kingdom, in the name of these various kings and queens, identify them as crimes or things that were bad and wrong and evil. And then, by the way, I hate to say it, make restoration, because there are a lot of very large and spacious territory in Europe occupied by individuals who the source of their wealth is the original Royal African Company and similar companies operating elsewhere. That's why this is an issue about colonization ought to be taken up. And for those who love monarchs, I would say the restoration of Charles II to return to the throne, that's a kind of a scar on you, because when he did that, the first thing he and his brother did was form this monopoly in the slave trade. The numbers are staggering for number of transported slaves over the years, and we also have the numbers, somewhere around 50,000 who died in passage. Most of them, those slaves going, we think of the Americas, people think the United States is where the main destination. It was not. It was primarily the destination was the Caribbean. But you have to go to the Republic of Barbados to get the details, I think, on that. So, probably covered that. I think we will come back. We're going to take a little break. We'll hear from Dr. D. Morgan and have something to say, maybe about the King, Elvis.